Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Here, your new mittens are done. These others serve you well after yesterday's snowstorm left the entire countryside covered in snow. You'll have to bundle up well if you want to go play outside, my older sister said, right after she finished knitting me a pair of mittens. Knitting clothes had been a speciality for as long as I could remember. I'll never forget the time she grabbed a pile of spare wool and crafted an adorable sheep costume for me to wear in our village's Mardi Gras costume party. In fact, knitting clothes and selling them on commission, or at the village's market, was one of our family's main sources of income. And by our family, I only mean my older sister and I, since we were the only ones that were left, being 19 and 9 years old respectively. During its great extent, our household had consisted of 5 people. My father, my mother, my older brother, my older sister and I, the youngest child and second daughter, and I would see it gradually shrink before my eyes across my 9 years of continued existence. My mother was the first one to go. My father and her attempted to bring another child into the world when I was only 2, but something went wrong in the process, causing her to fall terribly ill and pass away a few weeks afterwards. My father was the next one. He left home when I was 7 years old, alongside a large number of other men, as our emperor had called them all to go to Russia, and he never came back. Lastly, my 16-year-old brother had left us only a few months ago. Not unlike my father, he had also been called by our emperor. Only this time, it was to join him on a daring campaign to defend our country from an impending invasion by a coalition of other nations we were at war with. So, I bundled up by putting on my new pair of mittens, as well as a thick and fluffy fur coat that covered my entire body from the top of my shoulders to the end of my legs. And lastly, a long woolen scarf which my sister had also knitted for me in the past that I wrapped around my head, covering it as well as my ears and neck. After getting properly dressed to face the low temperatures, I joyfully said goodbye to my sister and stepped outside my house, ready to spend the chilly December afternoon having fun in my snow-coated, humble little village tucked away at the edge of a relatively dense and remote forest. I loved playing and roaming around my village and its surroundings, especially now that the first snowfalls had arrived and had blanketed everything in a dense layer of white snow that made the environment twice as beautiful. My favourite place to spend my leisure time in was the forest right beside the village. It had such a magical feeling to it, a bustling sea of towering trees teeming with life, wonder, beauty, and endless possibilities for fun and adventure, practically begging to be explored from top to bottom by children such as myself. I happily roamed the woods, playing in the snow, trying to count how many wild animals such as hares or birds I could spot, and skipping around while pretending to be a fairy. After about an hour of aimlessly roaming around and enjoying myself in a plethora of different ways, I eventually decided to follow a narrow trail that I had never explored before and that had led me deeper and deeper into the forest, until I stumbled upon something that left me puzzled. It was a tunnel, a man-made one made out of stone bricks and concrete. What was a tunnel doing in the middle of a forest? It was about 50 meters long. The other end of the tunnel could barely be seen from where I was standing in, but the space in between the two extremes was shrouded in darkness. It didn't seem to lead anywhere, as the only thing that could be seen on the other side was just more woodland. According to my grandpa, the ruin should be nearby, said an echoing voice as I was still perplexingly staring at the mysterious tunnel and theorizing about its reason for existing. It sounded like the voice was coming from inside the tunnel itself. The voice from the tunnel was soon joined by the sound of continuous footsteps and other murmuring voices that were getting increasingly louder and clearer with each passing second. It was clear the people from the tunnel were getting closer. 3 silhouettes emerged from the shadowy tunnel. They appeared to be children, 2 boys and a girl, to be exact. All of them looked to be about the same age as me. But as the mysterious kids and I simultaneously and silently stared at each other for a few seconds, I couldn't help but notice several details about them that felt rather off, mainly concerning their appearance and the clothes they wore. I recognized their outfits as winter gear, coats, scarves, hats and gloves. However, the material and textures and overall design of their clothes were unlike any I had ever seen. Is that a girl? One of the boys whispered to the other two kids under his breath, as I quietly stared at them from a few feet away without moving a muscle. Yeah, I think so. What's she doing here, though? And what's the deal with her weird clothes? The other boy replied. I don't know. Maybe we should talk to her, the girl of the group suggested. It was then when I noticed yet another oddity, the way they spoke. I could understand them well enough to recognize their language as my own and hold a conversation with them with relative ease. But still, their mannerisms and vocabulary contained several words and expressions that were completely foreign to me. Hi, are you lost? The girl said to me, taking a step forward and waving with her gloved hands at me. Hello. No, I live in a nearby village, and I visit this forest quite frequently, as a matter of fact, I uttered back, thinking it through for a couple of seconds. Excuse me, but has anyone in your village ever heard about fashion? No offense, but you kind of look like an old lady, with that antiquated fur coat you're wearing and that oversized scarf you got wrapped around your head. Have you ever posted a picture of yourself dressed like this to social media? Because you would gain quite a few followers for sure, one of the boys exclaimed. I wanted to reply, but ultimately decided to keep silent after processing what the boy had said and realizing I'd only understood the part where he had called me an old lady and had made fun of my clothes. But as for the rest of things that had left his lips, I hadn't understood a thing. Social media, posting pictures of myself, gaining followers? What in the world was he talking about? Who were those kids? Where had they come from? Come on, guys, don't be so rude. It's okay, I think you look great. I'm Emily, and these are Lewis and Mathis. Do you want to be our friend? The girl comforted me as she put a hand on my shoulder. I'm Juliet, I introduced myself and accepted Emily's friendship proposal. As odd as they were, there weren't many children my age I could play with at the village, so it was nice to finally have someone I could spend my afternoons with. I came back home later that evening feeling quite rejoiced, as my new friends and I had plenty of fun playing in the forest. As odd as I had initially found them to be, they turned out to be pretty nice once I actually got to know them. So much so that we had accorded to meet the following day at the same spot we first found each other, that ominous tunnel they had come from in the middle of the woods. But right when I approached our bed, as my sister and I slept together in the same large bed that had once belonged to our parents, I noticed an odd piece of paper under the pillow, which I identified as a note upon closer inspection. Be wary of those who have slipped through the tunnel of time, for they are potential sources of chaos that will be put down without mercy if necessary. Signed, Tunnel Keepers, the note read. What are you reading, Juliet? My sister asked upon entering our room. A note I've just found under the pillow, I replied. A note? Has our brother finally sent us correspondence from the front? My sister asked again, briefly letting out a smile of pure joy at the thought of hearing from our brother for the first time in months. I shook my head, and her expression briefly changed to one of disappointment, before morphing back into one of intrigue. It's not from our brother. It's from some strangers who apparently call themselves the Tunnel Keepers. Here, you should see it for yourself. Should I be worried? I said to her before handing her the note. The Tunnel Keepers. I honestly have no idea who these people could be. I'll look into it tomorrow, Juliet. But now it's time to go to bed. It's pretty late already. Good night, my sister replied after reading the note, seemingly sweeping it under the rug rather quickly, as she fell asleep in less than 10 minutes of laying in bed. But I certainly didn't, as the thought of that note, its mystery and its implications persistently refused to leave my mind and let me sleep. could those so-called tunnel keepers be related to the mysterious tunnel I'd come across in the middle of the woods? Could they be related to Emily, Lewis and Mathis? I was unsure of the latter, but their name made their connection with the tunnel from the forest seem almost obvious. Still, it was clear I couldn't come to any substantial conclusions just yet, as I needed more information in order to be able to formulate valid hypotheses. After spending the whole morning in the village's market selling pieces of cloth alongside my sister, and after having lunch, I headed to the forest in order to meet Emily, Lewis and Mathis, just as we had accorded the previous day, but with the added feeling of lingering uneasiness, product of the ominous note I'd found in my bed. This omnipresent disturbance only increased once I came across a fallen tree right in the middle of the narrow pathway that led to the tunnel, actively blocking my path, which was odd, since it was the only tree that had fallen among the dozens of trees that surrounded that narrow trail, and the other trees did not show any signs of damage either. Only that one tree, which just so happened to have fallen in the right position so as to represent an obstacle in my path to the tunnel. I stared at the fallen tree and thought about it for a few seconds. But then I remembered Emily, Lewis and Mathis were waiting for me. So I kept the memory of the fallen tree in the back of my mind, jumped over it and pressed on towards the tunnel. "Juliet, we're over here," I heard Emily, Lewis and Mathis excitedly shout from right outside the tunnel. "Hello again. What game do you want to play today?" I joyfully asked as I approached them. "Actually, we want to do the thing that we wanted to do when we came here yesterday, but we never ended up doing because we found you and forgot about it. You see, we originally came to the forest because we were looking for the ruins of an abandoned village that several grown-ups we know have told us about. According to the local stories, the village used to be located somewhere near these woods. Some people speculate that its residents abandoned it due to a war, but no one really knows for sure what happened to it," Emily explained. "An abandoned village near the forest? How come I've never heard of it before? The village I live in is located right next to the woods, but it's not abandoned. I live there, my sister lives there, and over 200 people live there. I can show it to you if you want," I said. And thus, Emily, Lewis and Mathis and I headed to my village, bypassing the mysterious fallen tree along the way. To say they were impressed by the village would be a severe understatement. They followed me across the village, all the while carrying facial expressions of complete wonder as they fixedly stared at everything around them. And they weren't the only ones, as practically every villager we'd pass by would also stare at my friends with the same fascination. Noticing this, I decided to discreetly lead them to my house and lend them clothes that had once belonged to my older sister and older brother back when they had been my age, in order for them to not draw as much attention to themselves. "Oh, by the way, I also wanted to show you this. I found it under my pillow yesterday," I told them as I showed them that weird note from the previous day written by those so-called tunnel keepers. "These tunnel keepers, I bet they're related to that tunnel in the forest," Lewis said. "Well, duh, I'm more worried about the people they talk about, the ones who slip through the tunnel of time, as they put it. I think they're talking about us three," Mathis replied as Lewis and Emily started to get visibly worried. "But what do these creepy strangers want from us? I'm getting scared, guys. Maybe we should go home already. It's almost dinner time," Emily suggested. Everyone unanimously agreed. And so, Emily, Lewis and Mathis left my home and village and headed back into the woods where they had come from, as I was left alone to think about the mystery of the tunnel keepers for a short while before my sister finally arrived home from the village's market. As my sister and I were getting ready to have dinner, I found a small, familiar piece of paper randomly laying on the floor right under the table. My heart rate started to go up as I slowly approached it and picked it up, just as I was dreading. Another note. "You led the sources of chaos in, and now you've become a source of chaos yourself. Therefore, we'll proceed to do what must be done. We will make sure those who you've recently sent home shall not cross the tunnel alive. Signed, Tunnel Keepers."
"Wait, Juliet, where are you going? Don't you want to eat dinner?" my sister asked in confusion as I frantically bundled up and rushed outside. It was a shame because my sister had made fried onion for dinner and I loved onion. I loved onion fried in oil because it tasted good. "I'm fine. I'll be back in a moment, I promise, I exclaimed to her before I sprinted to the forest, determined to help my friends and save them from whoever those tunnel keepers were. Juliet! Juliet! Emily shouted as she ran towards me, her eyes soaked in tears. Emily, what happened? Where are Lewis and Mathis? I worryingly asked, noticing her despair. We were about to enter the tunnel and go home, but then a group of monsters came out of it and I ran, but Lewis and Mathis didn't react quick enough and they ate them. The tunnel keepers, they jumped at them and swallowed them both right in front of me. They're coming for us, Juliet, Emily uttered in between sobs as she broke into tears. It didn't take long before I spotted them in the distance. There were at least 20 of them, their elongated bodies swiftly dragging themselves across the forest while staying low to the ground with the help of a pair of long, thin extremities that sported two huge claws each. A pair of pointy protuberances on their heads looked to be their ears. As for their faces, they had two bright, glowing yellow eyes and nothing else. They seemed to have no mouths or nose to speak of. Emily and I rushed back to the village as the tunnel keepers crawled towards us. They seemed to be slower than us, allowing us to reach the village with a slight time margin we could use to warn everybody. But they kept pursuing us relentlessly nonetheless. Monsters! Monsters! Help! Emily and I shouted across the street. The commotion caught the attention of the village's small garrison of Imperial troops, which came to us to find out the cause behind our sudden warnings. They're coming to the village. We're in danger. We need to hide, I nervously told the soldiers. Easy there, kid. Who's coming? An enemy army? Is it the Russians or the Prussians? Or the Austrians, perhaps? I need more information, young lady, the garrison's captain replied. They're not humans. They're monsters. Big, scary, and dangerous monsters. I'm telling the truth, I swear, I clarified, feeling so tense I could almost feel my blood boiling inside my veins. The captain responded with a silent and smug smirk, clearly not taking my words seriously. But he admitted he had nothing to lose for playing along. So I convinced him to pull out a spyglass and check the forest out from a distance. His facial expression of mockery instantly turned into one of utter shock and horror once he spotted the horde of timekeepers emerging from the woods. My God, I can hardly believe it, but I'm afraid the kid is somehow right. We need to tell all villagers to dig in and prepare themselves for an attack. I have no idea what in the world those disgusting creatures could possibly be, but we must have courage and defend our people. We'll gather in the main gate and deny them entry to the village by all means necessary. Understood? Now go. Long live France. Long live the Emperor, the captain exclaimed as he rallied his small force of 50 soldiers, mostly made up of young conscripts, much like my older brother. They were almost certainly just as terrified as Emily and I were, and rushed to the village's main gate to intercept the tunnel keepers. The garrison outnumbered the monsters and did not hesitate to unceasingly shoot volley after volley of musket balls and grenades at them. But they seemed to inflict no significant damage as the creatures aggressively pounced at the line of troops, catching 15 soldiers at once and consuming them by slowly and painfully absorbing them, as if the creatures' enormous bodies and skin suddenly lost consistency and solidity and became something akin to quicksand, swallowing their poor victims whole as they screamed and helplessly struggled to liberate themselves. To no avail, their desperate cries for help being abruptly silenced as they vanished into the tunnel keeper's stomachs in a matter of seconds, never to be seen again. Upon witnessing their comrade's demise, the garrison captain immediately ordered a retreat as his line disintegrated into a chaotic mob of horrified and traumatized young men fleeing for their lives. The tunnel keepers swept through each street one by one, effortlessly crushing the few brave souls who had dared to make a stand behind the numerous improvised and extremely rudimentary barricades scattered throughout the village. Most villagers, including Emily, my sister and I, gathered at the village's square and hid inside the church. The square was, by far, the most well-defended area of the village, with a line of trenches reinforced by wooden fences and parapets made out of piled-up sandbags. Among the defenders were most of the village's adult male population, alongside what remained of the Imperial garrison, including its captain. Despite literally throwing away their lives for our village, the defenders only managed to hold the line for less than 2 minutes before the trenches were overrun and most defenders were consumed by the tunnel keepers, as the women, children, and the battered remnants of the force that attempted to defend the trenches could do nothing but cower inside the church, which the tunnel keepers besieged as they climbed up its walls like spiders and shattered its windows. As a last resort to preserve the village's most valuable lives, it was agreed to evacuate all the children through the church's back door, as every man and woman that could hold a gun would make a final stand to distract the tunnel keepers and buy enough time for the children to escape safely. "Don't cry, my little sister. I'll always be watching over you, as long as you never forget about me. Right, dear?" My sister comforted me as we gave each other one last hug with our faces soaked in tears. "I love you," I shouted at her as Emily and I left the church and my sister picked up a musket laying on the floor and armed herself like the other adults, preparing to sacrifice themselves and engage the tunnel keepers head on. "The tunnel. We need to get to the tunnel and cross through it," Emily said as we both ran into the woods. I briefly looked back at the village, only to find a pair of tunnel keepers had abandoned their peers and were now chasing us across the forest at full speed. "Run faster," I exclaimed to Emily as we approached the infamous tunnel. We entered the tunnel without a second thought, with the tunnel keepers on our heels. It was so dark, I couldn't see a thing. Not the other end of the tunnel, not Emily running right beside me, not the tunnel keepers pursuing us. Nothing. It was all pitch black, but I could still hear everything very clearly. Emily's footsteps and heavy breathing, as well as my own. And of course, the tunnel keeper's heavy footsteps that intensely reverberated across the tunnel's walls and ceiling. I could hear them getting closer and closer and closer. Then, Emily screamed as the sound of her footsteps, in coordination with mine, abruptly ceased. It happened so fast, I didn't have time to fully process it. So I kept running, exhausted as I was, without slowing down, without looking back. I needed to reach the exit of that hellish tunnel or die trying. As I desperately gasped for air and dropped to my knees after finally having reached the other end of the tunnel, I was overwhelmed by a sudden and uncomfortable silence. The tunnel keepers that had been chasing me so relentlessly did not come out of the tunnel to continue to pursue me and vanished without a trace. The distant screams coming from the village had also ceased. Everything had mysteriously stopped. I was suddenly all alone in the middle of the woods, surrounded by nature, peace and quiet. That didn't really make me feel peaceful at all. After spending a considerable amount of time thinking about what I should do, I ultimately decided to head back to the village in hopes of finding any survivors and finding my older sister specifically. Instead, the sight I was met with upon reaching the place I used to call home left me with such a feeling of inner emptiness and devastation, I can hardly put it into words. But to put it simply, that place was not a village anymore. An extremely deteriorated wall or two, as well as the outline of the foundations barely visible in the ground, was all that remained of most houses, with some having completely collapsed and having become nothing more than a pile of rubble. The pavement on the streets had been buried under several layers of mud, moss and weeds, and the town square and church had been almost entirely taken over by brambles and bushes. Was that a dirty, withered musket hidden behind the tall grass? Were those bones and skulls scattered inside the overgrown derelict church? Was that a pine tree surrounded by debris and a couple crumbling walls growing in the same exact place my house used to be? It was apparent the tunnel keepers alone could not have been responsible for the village's current state. It did not look like a village that had been raided and deserted less than an hour prior. It looked like a village that had been completely abandoned, forgotten, and rotting away for a really, really long time, to the point that it had been enveloped by vegetation and assimilated into the forest itself. I aimlessly trudged down a long road I had come across after exiting the woods and what was left of my old village. Traumatized, fatigued, cold and homeless, as tears poured down my eyes like waterfalls and my teeth began to chatter due to being exposed to the frigid winter air out in the open in the middle of the night. I was suddenly blinded by an intense light that emanated from a pair of glowing orbs belonging to a creature that advanced towards me at an alarming speed. At first, I thought the tunnel keepers were back. But I was wrong. That thing was an entirely different being I had never seen before. it emitted a constant roaring noise as it rolled down the road with wheels similar to that of a carriage, but it moved autonomously without being pulled by any horses or any animal whatsoever. It also seemed to constantly release an odd gas of some kind. My brain instructed me to run away, but my body had already been physically and psychologically pushed to its absolute limit. I couldn't take it anymore, so I responded to the new threat by dropping to the ground and losing consciousness. When I woke up, I was no longer in the same place I'd fainted in, no longer in the middle of the road out in the open, but indoors, laying on a bed inside a room mostly painted white and filled with all sorts of strange appliances I did not recognize. "Oh, you're awake. Hello, how are you feeling?" said a young woman wearing a white coat as she walked into the room. I did not answer her. Instead, I just silently stared at her, raising an eyebrow in confusion. "It's all right, sweetheart. You're in a hospital, and I'm the nurse that's been assigned to take care of you. My name's Anne. It's wonderful to meet you. A truck driver brought you here. He said he found you alone in the middle of the road, and that he nearly ran you over. Thankfully, he was able to react in time and hit the brakes at the last second. But you fainted right afterwards, so he decided to collect you and bring you here. You've been unconscious for about 2 hours. Why don't you tell me a bit about yourself? What's your name? Where are you from? Is there any grown-up you know and trust we can reach out to?" the nurse said, after noticing how lost I was. "My name's Juliet, and I have no clue where I'm from. I used to know it, but that was a very long time ago. My home is gone, my family's gone, my friends are gone. Everything I've ever known is gone. I don't feel like talking about it right now," I faintly and sobbingly uttered, using what little energy and willpower I had left. "I see. Don't worry, Juliet. You're tired and cold, but you can take all the time to recover you need. I'm here for you," Anne replied in a cooing, motherly tone before she wrapped me in a blanket and started feeding me a hot bowl of soup. What followed was several minutes of silence, during which Anne fed me a spoonful of soup after another as I curled up to her, swaddled from top to bottom in a bulky white blanket. Neither of us saying a word. My mind was too busy processing all I had been through that day to talk. The more I remembered, the soggier my eyes got, and the harder it got to contain my urge to burst into tears. "It's completely all right, dear. You can cry all you want. Don't hold back," Anne gently whispered to me. It was then when I let everything out and I cried on her lap like I had never cried before, as she wrapped her arms around my torso in a long, comforting embrace for what felt like ages. I cried for my sister, for my village, for Emily, Lewis and Mathis. I cried because they had also died 200 years ago and they were never going to come back. I cried because the tunnel keepers had taken everything from me. A lot has happened since I first crossed the tunnel that fateful evening of 1813 and emerged in 2013. I've since grown into a teenager that's more or less gotten accustomed to the modern world. I've gotten a new home, a new family, new friends, the chance to go to school, to learn foreign languages, and to dream of someday going to college and becoming a historian. All thanks to Anne, who I now have the joy to call my adoptive mother. But still, the feeling of dread has never fully disappeared. I'm aware the tunnel keepers have not gone away. I can still feel them. I can feel the nightmares and hear the villagers' screams every time I go to sleep. I know they still see me as the source of chaos that has slipped through the tunnel of time. Because deep down, I know that's what I am. And I know they'll come for me. Restoring order is their duty. It's just a matter of time before I find the next note under the pillow. After all, they have all the time in the world.